You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Want to join in on the conversation? Call or text 855-75-CIVIC. Now back to Brian and Jamie.
7:06 right now. Thank you so much, Parker. If you've been listening to the show behind the show, we've been talking a little bit about the Oak Ridge Boys this morning. I'm so
Long
excited.
Story.
I love the Oak Ridge Boys, and Elvira is always just one of those fun songs that you got to listen to every now and then. My name is Jamie Martinson. You're listening to Daybreak on the Civic Media Network. And Brian, without further ado, I think we need to try to get somebody some daily cash prizes here.
Give away some cash, Jamie. This is day three of the Break Into Spring Multi-State Text to Win contest here on Civic Media. Every day we are giving away $200, and you are then entered for a chance to win the grand prize package, a new mattress set from Verlo. It's a over $1,300 total package. You get the V3 plush medium mattress, the queen tensile sheets, the queen mattress protector, and two queen-size active dough pillows. No yeast for that active dough. They're just very comfy pillows. Oh, you want to win that. So that's the grand prize. That'll be given away at the end. But every day, like I said, we are giving away $200. And your chance to win changes throughout the day, but your first chance to win is now.
It is.
For the next hour, Jamie, they can text a word. You are a good speller, so I will let you spell out the word of the hour.
Spelling Bee champion 4 years running, by the way. Literally, snooze.
Another flex. Put it on the list.
Snooze is your word this hour. S-N-O-O-Z-E. S-N-O-O-Z-E. Snooze is your word this hour. Again, you have to use your Civic Media app and text us that word so you can qualify for that $200 or that queen mattress set. Again, one more time, and we'll give it to you multiple times throughout the hour. Mm-hmm. Snooze, S-N-O-O-Z-E. So text us that word using your app for this multi-state contest.
Can I enter more than once?
Yes, you sure can. That's the beauty of it. In fact,
you can
enter multiple times, even this hour, and multiple times throughout the day. So be listening for that word to change. But again, until 8 o'clock, snooze is your word, S-N-O-O-Z-E. That is what you need to text us this morning. So, exciting stuff.
Perfect. Well, people are already entering.
I know.
That's very
Cindy,
exciting.
Cindy, Mark, thank you so much. Chuck's getting in there. Oh, my gosh, look at him come in now. All right.
Woo. Maybe we want to, maybe we should bet on where the, because it's multi-state. Ooh. Maybe we start to bet. Could we go online? Do you think a bet
maybe
about who would win?
Maybe. I think that's possible, and especially if Governor Evers passes this particular bill that's going to land on his desk pretty soon.
So if you, what do you think about legalized online sports betting here in Wisconsin? Are you pro? Are you con? It makes sense if people are already doing it. Why do we need to legalize it, right? Is it just making it easier for folks to get into trouble? Perhaps degenerate gamblers. I love the word. I love to call gamblers degenerate, even if they only bet like once in their life.
Like a
everybody's
buck.
I'm a degenerate gambler. I haven't bet in ages. But if you want to get involved in that, give us your opinion. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. So a bipartisan bill to legalize online sports betting in Wisconsin has passed the Senate, the state Senate, 21-12. It's now headed to Governor Evers, who has not yet said if he will sign it. We talked about in vetoing the previous bill, so I wonder. 12 Democrats also supported this, 9 Republicans, and then 9 Republicans and 3 Democrats voted against it. So both parties divided on this issue, legalized sports betting. I know, Jamie, you've talked about one of your sons is a fan
prop
of
better.
Sports online prop betting.
Yeah.
I've never placed a bet online. I know Parker has. Well, he goes to meetings, but he still puts down a bet once in a while.
For the record, I haven't.
Oh, you haven't?
No.
Gone to a meeting? You should. They're nice.
No,
they'll help
never.
You. They'll,
I never
they'll
will.
They'll support you.
They seem awful.
Meetings are
from
awful.
Quitters.
Meetings are awful. We try not to go to them very often. But right now, sports betting in the state of Wisconsin is only legal in person at tribal casinos. So with this particular bill, Brian, it would allow people to place bets on their phones anywhere in Wisconsin as long as the system processing the bet is located on tribal land. Now, this is where it gets a little complicated, right?
Yeah.
Because this bill uses a hub and spoke model. That's what it's called. So what
explain.
So what that essentially means is the hub is a server on tribal land. The spokes are users placing bets all across the state. And it follows a similar setup approved in Florida through a federal court case. So this proposal was strongly backed by several of the Wisconsin tribes. And lawmakers say that it helps maintain tribal sovereignty and exclusivity in gaming, which tribes have held for decades. Wisconsin's gaming compacts with tribes date back to the early 1990s, in case anybody's wondering. And those agreements actually allow them to operate casinos and return a portion of revenue to the state, which then helps fund things like local services, tourism, and economic development. So when you look at how the betting operation as a whole looks in the state, it goes to a lot of things. The question now becomes, are we comfortable with people being able to place bets anywhere in the state by using their phones? You know, and Scott pointing out over on the text line listening on WMDX, only in Wisconsin do we get legalized betting before we get legalized marijuana, question mark. It's a good point. Thank you for the text this morning, Scott. Again, that number if you want to chime in today, 1-855-752-4842, 1-855-75-CIVIC. If you think this is a good idea or we're just asking for trouble in the state of Wisconsin. I mean, what's your take on something like this, Brian?
Well, listen, you're going to have pushback from the big gaming companies, you know, FanDuel, those kind of things that are going to say, no, we want everybody to do it. I understand the tribes, but they've got their in-person betting. You've got the sports books there. They've got their piece of the pie. I don't know what the benefit would be.
Sure.
Because people are still going to... You're not looking out for the people. You're just shifting where the money's going to go. And you could say, yes, well, then all that online money stays in the state, basically, goes to the tribes, as opposed to multinational companies that are running these other big things. It doesn't take into effect the other question about just the – and I'm not a big let's regulate sin, because we all have our vices one way or another.
Right.
I think for young people, it's dangerous to have the betting on your phone because the consequences, they don't understand them. We see enough people, and a lot of people can bet with no issue, but there's people who can't. So we're going to have online betting. I don't think we need to worry about it as much as we are. I don't think the tribes, they're going to lose a lot of money if they don't have it. But they're still making all their other gaming money,
right?
Or if you're going to make it legal, have it all legal. Do the hub and spoke. You can bet. You can make your bets with the local casinos or the tribes. If you like to do your prop bets on one of the other companies, you can do that. I don't use them, so I am only looking at all right, where's the money going? Of course, we want to keep the money in the state, but we also have to realize that this is a worldwide thing, and you can't be so insular and provincial and parochial to say, you can do it, but you can only do it the way we want you to do it.
Right. No. Lynn from Golden Valley chiming in, listening on 93.5 The Tap out of Eau Claire, says that seems this would cut and hurt tourism. People would no longer need to visit the tribal casinos. I bet they would help very few of the tribes, but hurt a lot. I mean, and I think that's also part of the argument. When you look at the pros to this, and I'm not a bettor in any way, shape, or form, so I don't even buy a lottery ticket when, you know, we're talking billions, so that's, you know, that's about the extent of what I know. But I think this is a fascinating argument, because this would keep money in the state. People are already betting, so whether it's through the apps or, you know, other states or unregulated sites. And legalizing it would mean that the money stays here in Wisconsin instead of going elsewhere. And it would create some sort of revenue that could go towards things like local services, infrastructure, or even property tax relief, depending on how it's being set up, which we don't know all the ins and outs yet of how it's being set up. So that would just be purely speculative. But there's also the economic boost, because when you expand gaming, you're talking about the jobs, the partnerships, more activity tied to Wisconsin tribal casinos, hopefully the tourism industry, but I do understand Lynn's concerns over on the text line as well. Supporters of this particular bill will tell you that it adds some level of consumer protection as well, because if it's regulated, there are going to be rules, there's going to be safeguards and oversight that still don't really exist with illegal betting. Now, one of my questions would be is about this hub and spoke model, because this essentially, from what I understand about this, is it limits who can participate. And you're already seeing pushback from, as you mentioned, the national companies and others right. who thinks that this is going to create some sort of legal gray area. There's also the fact that Wisconsinites don't really want this, Brian.
Yeah,
that's kind of a big sticking point. In fact, a new Marquette poll found that 64% of Wisconsin voters oppose any sort of online sports betting, while about one-third support it. I think it's going to be an interesting battle. Now, Governor Evers has previously worked with tribes to expand gaming. Recent agreements already allow some tribes to offer that on-site sports betting, but not the mobile betting. Supporters are saying that the regulated system would be good, the consumer protections are going to be good, revenue in Wisconsin would be good, helping local economies is good, and they also point to the rise of the prediction markets, meaning online platforms where people bet on outcomes like sports or politics, as another reason to create clear rules.
Oh, you mean the guys who made millions predicting that Iran would be bombed?
Yes, those type of people. And of course, then you have your opponents to this bill who say it goes too far. It would increase gambling problems, as we've discussed here. They also say that would allow betting from a phone removes natural limits. And instead of having to go to a casino, you would have the access to do everything, anytime, anywhere in your hand, which, you know, I mean, well, we have that problem with a lot of things now in this country because of how connected we are.
Sports, in-person betting, and I did a little research myself. Mm-hmm. In-person betting is still the main revenue source for casinos. Sports betting has gone up. In 2024, it was $10.92 billion in revenue, but that's sports betting in the casinos. So online has gone up. They are not going to lose money, the tribes, by not having it. They would just not make exponentially more. And if you've ever been to a tribal casino here in Wisconsin, you know a lot of them are full of busloads of seniors playing slots.
Yes.
That's the bread and butter. And that's even in Vegas, they say. That's those slots and those people who sit there like my wife and just pump money mm-hmm. into the slot machine. That's the money. Yeah, they're bringing in a nice chunk from the sports book, a nice chunk from the table games. You're making your money on the slots, and you're making your money with bodies in the seats.
Yeah.
So while, yes, we all want people to make more money.
Yeah.
Well, most people, we want them to make more money. Other people, they've got enough. Stop. it's not going to really hurt.
Right.
More.
Yeah.
You know, you're not losing anything. You can't lose what you don't have.
Right. Yeah.
And if you're not losing money as a casino, there's only one person who could do that. And he's already got another job screwing up everything else.
Well, his went bankrupt, so that makes sense.
Jamie, again, he won the casino wars in Atlantic City. I heard that.
That's what he says. I mean, I hear him say a lot of things. I hear him say a lot of things.
Well, what you're going to hear us say next is swipe or stay, because that's coming up when we come back. It's Daybreak. I'm Brian Noonan.
I'm Jamie Martinson, 719 on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
722 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning on the Civic Media Network. It is time for Swipe or Stay. We love this segment because we avoid the politics talk for just a little bit and we get more into the pop culture. But, you know, as most things in this world, everything binds together somehow, some way. And we get to, you know, have our senior producer, Frank, join us. So good morning. How are you today?
I'm good. I just placed a bet on my phone.
Really?
Did you?
No, I didn't.
Was it whether we would swipe or stay? Is it a prop bet?
Yes, actually.
Okay. How many times will they swipe? How many? Okay. All right.
Oh.
I like that.
Now you've swayed it. Now you've ruined it. You've swayed
the bets.
Sometimes
you got to grease the wheels, Brian.
That's right.
That's what she said. Go ahead, Frank.
Swipers say, I'm going to read some pop culture headlines. Brian and Jamie will have to decide whether they want to stay on it or swipe on to the next one. If they tie and can't decide, Parker will be the deciding vote. Let's move on to story number one. Jamie just said we don't dive too much into politics. And yet, story number one.
Oh.
Legendary band rips into Texas politician.
Oh, I saw this.
I always like these cease and desist stories. I'm going to say I would vote stay.
I'm going to say stay because I saw it come across a news feed yesterday and didn't have time to dive into it. So I want to get into the story, not read the headline.
So I'm so happy you guys stayed on this one. The B-52s are not happy with John Cornyn down in Texas.
Rock Lobster?
Yep. Actually, Love Shack this time.
Oh!
Tin Roof!
Cornyn's campaign dropped a political attack ad Tuesday using AI-generated content to go after Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton and his sex scandal.
Wow.
It is Ken Paxton's Love Shack.
Oh, my.
Wow.
So the band released a statement saying, today we learned that our song Love Shack is being used without our approval for a political attack between two politicians in the beautiful state of Texas. We do not endorse either candidate. We have already formally demanded the song immediately cease to be used in the tasteless and illegal way. Having said all that, and I do agree with them, especially since it's AI slop.
Yep.
It's pretty funny.
That's genius.
I'm not going to lie. It's hilarious.
Like, from a marketing standpoint, that's genius. And now I want to go see the ad.
Right.
Brian, you could say it was a low blow. Hello. All right.
Boom, boom, boom. Euphemism.
We're going to move on. A hockey star has beef with the Hall of Fame.
I'll stay.
I know Frank would be sad if I
said no.
Swiped, but I always like to let Parker in, and I want to see if Parker will go against Frank, not against me. I am going to swipe.
I'm going to
choose
stay.
Wisely, Parker.
I'm staying, Frank.
Good choice.
I'm interested.
He made the right choice.
He did. I knew.
USA Olympic hero Jack Hughes is not happy with the Hockey Hall of Fame. Jack Hughes scored the golden goal against Canada, winning Team USA their first gold medal since the Miracle on Ice, and the puck now lives in Toronto, of all places, at the Hockey Hall of Fame. Yes.
Wow.
Hughes said he's trying to get it back and that it's, quote, BS that the Hall of Fame gets to have the puck. Alongside that puck is also Megyn Keller's overtime golden goal, as well as Brady Tkachuk's jersey and Hillary Knight's jersey that all live in the Hockey Hall of Fame in Toronto, Canada.
Huh.
Hughes went on to say that he doesn't want it for himself. He wants it to give to his dad.
Parker apparently has a question because he's raising his hand.
Yes.
Go ahead.
What about like all the Canadians that are in the MLB Hall of Fame? That's in like, who, like, that's just, it's where it is.
Do you think, no, I get that. And I've been to the Hockey Hall of Fame and they have an entire shrine to Sidney Crosby when he scored the golden goal against the U.S. However, I want to know, do you think, Parker, they should have the choice to either keep it or give to the Hall of Fame?
Now, that's a good point.
Because
who owns it?
It's my understanding that none of them had a choice in this matter.
Yeah, see, yeah. That's a problem.
Yeah.
I would say they should be able to keep it. They should be able to hang on to it and maybe just make some sort of codicil in your will that when my survivors are gone, it will go to the Hockey Hall of Fame. Or, you know, it's Team USA. Put it in the Team USA Hall of Fame.
Right.
I'm sure there's a Hockey Hall of a North
there
America,
a
U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame.
There is a U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame.
Right. And I would say that. But this is something, if it was me, you look at the guys who break any sort of a home run record or any sort of record. They want that bat. They want that ball. Jack Hughes should be able to keep that. I know like Jack Callahan, who was on the 80 team, he had all his stuff, his jerseys, everything. Mm-hmm. And I know that because he lent them to us one time for something. But
flex.
Yeah, Frank, listen, Jamie won 4 spelling bees.
I did.
I got to throw something out there. She's out there flexing that big brain. I got to throw something down. I met an Olympian. Yeah.
Which is way cooler, let me tell you.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I need to use spell check. You don't need to use hockey check.
All right, let's move on.
Yeah, let's move on. Okay. Jamie,
go ahead. Let's move on.
Long-running ABC show loses endorsement due to controversy.
Oh, I'll stay.
Yeah, stay.
I have tried avoiding this story like the plague, and yet it just keeps coming up. We only have a minute. I'm going to stay briefly on this. Cinnabon is pulling their endorsement from The Bachelorette.
Oh.
This comes from abuse allegations aimed at Taylor Frankie Paul, the new Bachelorette and a star of the Secret Lives of Mormon Wives TV show.
Wow.
Mormon Wives has put filming on hold after the allegations surfaced, while The Bachelorette is going full steam ahead. For more information, I implore you, go on to TMZ because they have the full story, and there's like multiple layers to it that I am not qualified to comment on because there is so much. We don't need to get into it.
No, it's crazy.
Go read it on your own, but it is insane.
Wow.
It did answer the question, who's this? Because The Bachelorette came on right after the Oscars, and I never watched it, but it was on. And I didn't watch it, but I'm like, who's this woman who's The Bachelorette? Because they were making a big deal that she was never... She wasn't on The Bachelor, and this is a change.
Started her career as a social media star. Just saying.
Nice job again.
Thank you. We always appreciate it.
We come back.
Local voices, statewide impact. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
7:35 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning on the Civic Media Network. And in just a moment, we have a great guest who's going to help us break down a little bit more of the war in Iran and some of the multiple layers to that. But before we do that, Brian, very, very quickly, we got to give out our break into spring word of the hour in this multi-state text to win contest.
And the word for this hour is snooze, S-N-O-O-Z-E, snooze. Use the Civic Media app, text in to win. You can text as often as you'd like, but just know that this word will end at 8 o'clock, and then you'll have to keep listening throughout the day. The word keeps changing. Every day we're giving away $200, and then you get a chance. You are entered for a chance to win the big grand prize, the mattress set. So there you go. Text snooze, S-N-O-O-Z-E. All right, we're in the third week of the war in Iran, and among all the troubling news, one of the most shocking things, at least to me, has been the revelation that Russia is providing Iran with targeting information to attack American forces. That's according to officials that are familiar with the intelligence report, and that was published in the Washington Post. Now, according to the reports, Russia has passed Iran the locations of U.S. military assets, including warships and aircraft. So what will Russia's role be in the conflict going forward? How does their involvement and the involvement of one of America's chief nuclear armed competitors and their connected intelligence apparatus affect us here in the U.S.? And what does it say about this administration's questionable relationship with the Kremlin? Well, I don't know. But that's why we always like to talk to experts. And Yoshika Herrera is here. She's a professor of comparative politics and international relations at UW-Madison. She also studies U.S.-Russian relations, international norms, and political economy. Yoshika, thank you for being here. This is a huge topic, but let's just boil it down at first. So historically, what has been the relationship between Russia and Iran?
So Russia has been a supporter of Iran for a long time. During the Cold War, the U.S. supported Iraq, Russia supported Iran. That's one part of it. But since the Iranian Revolution, Iran is a Shia country that had some tensions with the other Arab states. Russia was, say, a supporter of Egypt, et cetera. So there's always been a little bit of there's not been like a super close relationship. However, the really key thing that happened is that Iran supported Russia in Russia's 2022 full-scale invasion of Ukraine. And what it did is it sent its Shahed drones to Russia. Russia eventually got the plans for those, and now Russia makes thousands of those a week. So this cooperation on drones is the thing that has really solidified their relationship. However, initially when this conflict broke out, you know, Russia doesn't have a great record these days with its allies. So Venezuela, Syria. So when the conflict first started, that, you know, on that Saturday, Russia offered condolences and, you know, lots of prayers and not that much else. But then it turns out, not only from the Washington Post, but also another article in the Wall Street Journal yesterday, Russia is sharing, it uses its satellite system that Iran does not have in order to share targeting intelligence on U.S. forces and U.S. positions like radar systems, et cetera. So it's not just the Washington Post. It's also the Wall Street Journal. It's also, you know, nobody is contesting it, actually, that Russia is sharing intelligence with Iran. And Russia expressed unwavering support for the new leader, the second Khamenei. So they are doing this. And the amazing thing is, as you said, instead of any kind of cost that they're paying for this, instead, what do they get? They get sanctions on their oil removed. Now, materially, it doesn't matter that much. It's a small amount of oil. It's only until April 11th. But symbolically, it's just weird. I mean, I don't know how else to describe it. Why would the U.S., you know, even symbolically reward a country that's, there's even a hint that they're putting U.S. forces at risk? And just let me say one more thing.
Yeah.
This war is costing Russia nothing, and they are raking in the money because the price of oil has made it such that they don't have to pump a drop of oil further out of the ground in order to increase their revenues hugely because of this. I mean, even last month, if you had asked me on the show, I would have said, well, Russia's really in economic crisis now. They're really running out of money. Nobody thinks oil is going to go anywhere near $80 a barrel where they are hoping it will go. No. But now we're over 100. So they're just raking in the money. There's also supposed to be on April 25th, European Union was supposed to cut off gas, LNG gas imports into Europe from Russia. And now, you know, a lot of the sanctions and restrictions on Russian oil and gas are kind of, there's a question mark about them because of the shortages around the world.
Now, you mentioned the sanctions, Yoshiko. You know, we've seen this administration be a little softer on Russia than previous administrations. Russia is deeply embattled yet in Ukraine. Do you see this as some sort of form of retaliation for the United States and their support for Ukraine? Or is this Russia just really trying to take advantage of a country that is being stretched across multiple conflicts right now?
Okay. Russia's number one strategic interest is to weaken the U.S. and NATO. There's just no question about that. You can ask anyone, any expert you want. That is their number one strategic goal. They are anti-Ukraine and, you know, they want to take over Ukraine primarily because, well, they don't accept Ukraine's sovereignty and nationhood. That's number one. But they don't want Ukraine joining NATO and they don't want Ukraine joining the EU. Because they're anti-Western. So this regime is anti-Europe, anti-US, anti-NATO, first and foremost. So some of the things that have happened, just almost as a gift to Putin, like remember Greenland? Mm-hmm. That was a potential very destructive thing for NATO. Well, Russia wants NATO weakened. And actually, the way that this Iran war has played out with the tension between NATO allies and the US is another just huge gift to Putin, because he could think he cannot win a military war with NATO, but to have NATO have tensions within it and as an alliance weaken, I mean, that's just an incredible gift to him. So he doesn't really care that much about Iran per se. I mean, it's not like there's a great affinity or anything. It's just that since Iran is fighting the US, he would like to help Iran. But the amazing thing is he's just paying no costs for this support. And then he's going to use that money to further build weaponry. I mean, he's also, people should understand, he's continuing to attack Ukraine every single day with missiles and drones all over the country. So he's using that money. He's going to use that money probably to mobilize additional soldiers because they are running out of soldiers and to do other things. I mean, Russia's conducting cyber warfare, hybrid warfare right now across Europe. I mean, you can look at different kinds of things that they're doing, not just the internet bots, but also assassinations, bombings, of cyber attacks on infrastructure and different things like that. So that's an ongoing operation. And this money that he's getting from the high oil prices is going to fund further operations in that front.
Yoshika Herrera is our guest. She's a professor of comparative politics and international relations at UW-Madison, studying one of her specialties is U.S.-Russia relations. And I want to go back to something you described, Yoshika, as weird. And I think we all believe this. Based on what we've learned about Russia feeding Iran intelligence for bombing our troops and our military installations, and then us loosening the sanctions, what possible gain can the U.S. get by loosening those sanctions? Are we so naive, and by we, I mean the administration, to believe that even any sort of gift to Putin is going to ensure loyalty or support?
Yeah, to be honest, this is a puzzle. I mean, I think people have theories of why the Trump administration is so fond of Putin. Some people think, you know, there's some compromising information, there's blackmail. I don't actually think that's that persuasive. Like, what kind of blackmail? Like, at this point, with the what is it that's going to be embarrassing at this point, right? Like, I find it really hard to understand, like, precisely what would be embarrassing. You know, money, like, this administration is already taking in money left and right from different kinds of deals. Now, the lead negotiator, Steve Witkoff, he not only recently said he trusts Putin, but in response to this question about the sharing of intelligence, President Trump and Putin spoke on the phone last week. And Witkoff said, well, you know, the topic came up and we asked him about it and he said they weren't doing it. And, you know, I just have to take him at his word. Now, I am puzzled by that. Is he so... I'm sorry to say, but literally dumb to just trust somebody who lies like every single day? Or what is going on? I know that Putin has really pulled out all the stops in terms of flattery, like, you know, presenting like a framed picture of him, of yeah. themselves, like, you know, I'm sure lots of gifts, but like, I don't know. Witkoff, however, and Kushner, in my opinion, are absolutely uninformed about Russia. Witkoff has visited Russia 7 times since 2022. He never visited Ukraine. Okay. So even just to know what's going on, he does not know. He and Kushner were very unprepared for the Iran talks as well. So, I mean, I think there's a combination of ignorance and naivete at best. And at worst, I just don't know.
This administration is obviously putting out mixed messaging as far as off-ramps, when things will end, why this conflict even started. How does that play into Vladimir Putin and basically weakening the United States and those NATO allies? How does that mixed messaging from this administration, with obviously very little plan in how this is going to play out, what does that embolden Putin at all in these cases?
Well, sure. I mean, he is just sitting there enjoying the show. He's liking that this is causing serious friction within NATO, that the energy prices are causing pain to democratic governments in Europe who face elections in the next couple of years, as well as in the US. And so he's just he doesn't necessarily care whether there's an off-ramp or not. I mean, it's fine with him if this goes on and causes further damage to Western governments.
We've got just a couple minutes left. Yoshika Herrera is our guest, professor of comparative politics and international relations at UW-Madison. Where do you see, Yoshika, the relationship between the U.S. and Russia going forward? How are we going to become more subservient to Russia? Where do you think we're going with this?
Well, I mean, Russia is weak. I mean, they've destroyed their economy. They have a range of problems. So, I mean, we are much stronger than Russia. So in terms of, you know, we could any day assert our power and say, like, hey, we're calling shots here. So, I mean, we have the capacity to change things if we desire. But I don't know. It has to be a policy change within the administration.
All right. Every time you come on, I wish we had more time because these are always fascinating conversations and there's always so much to go through. I mean, between that, China not even stepping in, this is a conversation we could have had for multiple minutes. But we appreciate you being here today, Yoshiko. Again, that is Yoshiko Herrera. She is a professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, a professor of comparative politics and international relations. She happens to study U.S.-Russian relations, and she will definitely be back as this conflict continues. It is 7:48 right now. My name is Jamie Martinson. You're listening to Daybreak.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Another civics lesson after this on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
52 right now, and we are going to get into a voting civics lesson in momentarily, but before we do that, you have 8 minutes left in this round of our multi-state text-to-win contest to text us the word of this hour, which, Brian, happens to be the word, I'm going to just lay it out there for everybody, snooze, S-N-O-O-Z-E, snooze is your word this hour, and of course you have to use your Civic Media app to win potentially cash and prizes and some good
That's
stuff,
right.
too.
It's the break into spring multi-state text to win. As Jamie said, this word is good for about another 7 minutes. Snooze, S-N-O-O-Z-E. And then you got to listen throughout the day. But don't worry, even if you don't enter before 8 o'clock, you can enter later in the day. Or if you did enter already, you can enter again. So
multiple
do
times.
That. Qualified for $200 a day. Qualified for the big grand prize. And that's that. So do it. All right, Jamie, it's time. You love to edumacate.
I do.
And this one I know is about the election on April 7th.
It is.
So I'm going to sit down and try to pay attention so I don't have to stay after class and slap erasers.
It's coming fast, folks. So, and for some of you, this is going to be information you probably already know. But, you know, when it comes to our elections, we got to make sure that for people who are new to this program, people new to the voting process, people just new to, you know, paying attention to what's happening in their government, you have all of the right information. So Election Day is on April 7th, and that includes the key state Supreme Court race, plus local offices and all of those referendums. So obviously we're talking school funding referendums. If you haven't checked your voter registration yet, now is the time because the online registration deadline is today. You can still register in person at your local clerk's office through April 3rd, and you can also register at the polls on Election Day. Make sure you have the proper identifying material with you, though. And you can get that by going to myvote.wi.gov to find out what you're going to need to bring with you. You also have to re-register if you've moved or changed your name since the last election. I know I have to do that later today because we have moved since the last election. You also need to bring proof of residence like a utility bill, a lease, or some sort of bank statement with your current address. Now, absentee or mail-in voting deadlines are also important. Your request deadline for this April 7th election is April 2nd at 5 p.m. You can request and track your ballot again, myvote.wi.gov. And if you're mailing it back, officials recommend sending it in by March 28th to be safe. Early in-person voting, also called just early voting here in the state, runs March 24th through April 5th. Dates, times, and locations are going to vary by your community, so you need to check with your local clerk. The biggest statewide race is for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Chris Taylor, the liberal, is in the race against Marie Lazard, the conservative. And this race is very important, Brian, because it could actually shift the balance of the court. If Taylor wins, it expands the liberal majority to 5-2. If Lazard wins, it keeps it at that 4-3 majority. Now, your ballot will also include local races, depending on where you're at in the state. That could include the mayor, the school board, judges, and even county officials. And a lot of communities, as we mentioned, have those referendums this time around. School funding proposals, local development questions, that can directly impact your taxes, your schools, and your local services. And here's the one thing I do want to point out. Even if you're a renter, That could also affect you with your rent, because if your landlord's property tax goes up, that could also mean that your rent is going to go up. So even if you think that I don't own property, it doesn't matter to me. Yes, it does. Yes, it absolutely does. And of course, if you want to preview your exact ballot ahead of time, again, myvote.wi.gov. There are two more big elections this year after this April 7th election. August 11th.
So is this just practice then?
This is practice. This is for the Supreme Court. We're going to get used to filling out our dots. We're going to go through the whole thing. We're going to, you know, vote for our Supreme Court justices. But on August 11th, I should say, this is the partisan primary for governor and Congress. And then November 3rd, of course, will be the general election or the midterms. And even though this is considered to be a spring election, we got to put that in air quotes, decisions made here, especially with the Supreme Court race and local referendums, are going to have a big impact on laws and that affect you, on your schools, in your communities, and some of the local policies that also take place and affect you on a daily basis in your community. So a lot of voting information. Ooh. Yes, Brian. Yes. Ooh. Ooh. Yes.
I was daydreaming when you gave me the dates for absentee ballots.
Yes. And, yes. Let's go back
they
through
that. Like one seemed to come before the other, but then I was a little confused. So
there's a lot of dates. There's a lot of
could
dates.
Could you give me those dates
yes,
again?
Absolutely.
I'll write it down this time.
Absolutely. So if you're going to vote, if you still need to register, you can do that online today. You can do it at your local clerk's office through April 3rd and also at the polls on election day. If you're requesting an absentee ballot, you have until April 2nd at 5 p.m. to do so. If you're mailing it back, you should probably have it in the mail by March 28th. And you can also early in-person vote in this state from March 24th through April 5th, but make sure you check your local precinct. So, yes, there is some overlap depending on which way you want to go and what works best for you and your schedule and how you want to place your particular vote.
So just because let's see if I got this right.
Yes,
I can
please.
Request an absentee ballot up until April 2nd. But if I wait till April 2nd, I then need to drop my absentee ballot
yes.
off in person. Because if I'm mailing it, I should mail it by the 28th of March.
Yes.
Which is before April 2nd,
yes.
correct?
Yes, absolutely.
All right.
Because
that's...
obviously mail runs a little bit slower than just taking it down to your local clerk's office. So if you're going to mail in, give yourself plenty of time. If you get that absentee and then you want to, you know, drop it off somewhere. So hand deliver it kind of thing. That's usually what I do. I usually have them send it to me. Then I always just hand deliver it because I know it gets where it needs to be quick and safely.
I've done that before, and then I thought, well, why did I, if I have to go in there anyway, why didn't I just vote in person?
There is that too.
If I'm not, I know, I get the absentee, I'm in favor, but sometimes I'm like you, I've gone,
yeah.
Oh, I forgot to,
sometimes you just need to look at the ballot a little bit longer. It's 7:59 right now. You are listening to the Civic Media Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.